I'm here for the armor.
If you want my armor, you'll have to peel it off my dead body.
I don't want your armor. I want my armor. That you got from Cobb Vanthback on Tatooine. It belongs to me.
Are you Mandalorian?
I'm a simple man making his way through the galaxy. Like my father before me.
Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm Richard.
And I'm Chris.
And this is House Podcastica, the Mandalorian edition.
This week we're covering The Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 6, Chapter 14, The Tragedy.
The Tragedy of the Razor Crest.
Don't waste any time getting to that, boy.
I mean, I think it's probably more about Baby Yoda, but I guess that's from a certain point of view.
Right.
Okay, so our Star Wars question of the week. Now, I wanted to mention, I totally forgot last week that actually a listener, CJ Dan, had submitted that question, and I just totally took credit for it. So, sorry about that. He's like, that sounded familiar.
My whole thing last week was it last week? Was it your question or a listener's? And I was worried that I'd offend a listener.
Well, you said you were glad it was mine. And right. So you could confidently say you didn't like it, but it's CJ Dan's.
Sorry, CJ Dan. I blame Jason.
Yeah, somehow I'm sure that's my fault. But this week I have a question that I came up with, I'm pretty sure, which is which core force power would you most want and why? And I phrase it that way because I went and looked up force powers and there's like 1,000 of them. So, but there was a list of like the main core ones and I'm going to read through those. Force speed lets you maintain super fast sprinting speed in short bursts and you see the world in slow motion, kind of like the Flash. Force stealth is you mask your ability to use the force or your force alignment, or even your entire presence from other force sensitives, which Palpatine must have been able to do since nobody on the Jedi Council knew he was actually, what was his name? Darth Sidious.
Yeah.
Force sight is enhanced visual and spatial perception, even in the dark or behind walls, which I think is an example of when Obi-Wan was training Luke with the remote and he wore that helmet so he couldn't see on the Millennium Falcon. Far seeing is when you gain vague impressions of events happening in other places or times. You detect when friends are in danger, examine details of past events, predict probable outcomes of a stated course of action, like clairvoyance. Force empathy is when you pick up impressions of an individual's feelings and general emotional state. And if you're really good at it, you can sense a person's motivations, hidden feelings, and even deeply guarded secrets. Couple more. Telepathy is reading minds and mentally communicating with other individuals over small or vast distances, which we saw Luke do on Bespin when he called out to Leia. If only he'd had a cell phone, he wouldn't need that power. Telekinesis is when you can move or manipulate physical matter, move, push, pull, choke, throw, crush, things like that. It says objects must be in physical sight. And then the last one is force jump, where you jump real high, which we saw Anakin and Qui-Gon Jinn do in Phantom Menace.
Pretty basic, that last one.
Yeah, but it was pretty cool. Yeah. I remember that was one thing I did love about the prequels is the Jedi in action. They were super cool. So what do you guys think? Did you have a chance to think about this?
Yeah, for me, I think it would come down to either far-seeing or telekinesis. I think with far-seeing, you know, predict the probable outcome of a stated course of action. You're sort of predicting the future. You can detect when your friends are in danger. I think you could do a lot of good with that. And I'm trying to come at this as from a light side of the force kind of perspective.
As opposed to like a casino visitor.
I guess that's a gray area, maybe.
Yeah, right.
But I think far seeing or telekinesis, because it would just be so convenient to be able to move stuff with my mind and, you know, carry all the groceries in all at once or something like that. So yeah. I think that those would be my choices.
I really want to be the responsible father, husband, teacher, citizen, whatever, and choose something like far-seeing or force empathy. But I'm going to go with telekinesis, too. I mean, having the power of, you know, like, you know, knowing what to do or empathizing with others would probably make me a better person.
Right.
And I'd probably become an asshole if I had telekinesis, but still, that would be pretty badass.
That'd be cool. Yeah, I mean, I figure telekinesis seems like the one that's the most like, hell yeah, especially because it's fun to watch in the movies and stuff. But I think I would have a hard time choosing between far-seeing and force empathy, where you can sense people's motivations and hidden feelings and even guarded secrets. I mean, yeah. I think I might regret that. It's one of those things that you wish you had, and then once you have it, you're like, wow, everyone's thinking that? Oh, crap. Mm. But I feel like if I had that, I don't necessarily think it would only be usable for good. You could use it for anything, but I think I would hopefully be able to navigate the world better and, you know, deal with people and get what I wanted. And if people weren't into me, but pretending they were, I could just say, you know, don't worry about it. You know, I'll see you later or whatever, not waste time. So I would probably, if I had to pick, well, Jude, far-seeing too, though, where you can predict the probable outcome of a stated course of action. That sounds amazing. I think if I had to choose, though, even though it's a really tough choice, I'd pick force empathy.
I think empathy and telepathy seem really similar, too. Like, you're sort of reading the emotions of people versus reading their minds. I don't know.
I think telepathy is more about communication. So right. it is just like you're able to project thoughts and I don't know if you can read people's thoughts unless they're also sort of willing participants.
Okay.
Maybe.
And it's funny, neither of us or none of us went with any of the physical ones, like running really fast or jumping really high.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's because we're old. I was just going to say the pain is a good selfish motivator, because just last weekend I was changing a tire on my daughter's car and I was like, man, it would be cool to have the force right now.
Sure.
Right. Zoop, zoop. I used to sit in class and just fantasize that I could use telepathy to like spin my teacher around like a the wheel on, you know, Price is Right or something. Woo woo.
It's so funny you say that, because even as an adult, when I used to ride the subway to work, if any time I'd come into the subway station and it was just leaving and I missed it, I was like, boy, I wish I was Spider-Man right now. Or boy, I wish I could use the force and just, you know, run, get onto that train somehow.
Or like call it back to you.
Call it back. Yeah.
Just step on like nothing happened. All right. That was fun. Let's move into this week's episode. It is The Mandalorian Season 2, Episode 6, Chapter 14, The Tragedy. How did you guys like this one?
Oh, man. It begins with a touching father-son moment, ends with a heartbreaking moment. Grogu all alone and handcuffed in a cell. And even more tragic than that, we already said, was Mando lost his ship. I started getting a little warm in the face.
I felt bad for both of you. That was the first thing I thought when that happened. I personally was like, oh, that is so cool. But then I was like, oh, poor Chris and Rich.
it was the most shocking thing for me in the episode. My jaw hit the floor when it got blown up. Like, you know, it's been damaged. We've seen it fallen into the ocean and it's been in pieces, you know, barely able to fly. But it's not coming back this time. Like, there's nothing left. Yeah, and I was so upset.
It's funny. I think they've been teasing us with it, you know. I've been predicting, oh, look, it looks like it's falling apart. Maybe he's going to get a new ship. And then, well, the Mon Calamari put it back together, but they did a really crappy job. So who knows? And then it's like, oh, no, he took it to Greef Karga's guys on Nevarro and they made it snappy, good as new. So I guess that was all just a fake out. And then, boom!
Just gone. Like,
and you
nothing.
Know he loves that ship as much as he loves anything else.
I know. I mean, I came to love the ship too, but I also thought it was an amazing moment because holy shit, it was a holy shit moment. And it also, this episode, one of the things I loved about it is in that way and other ways, it raised the stakes, which I think is great. So even when things that are tragic happen, I think that's great. It's great drama, you know. Baby Yoda being captured is horrible, but it's also really good storytelling.
Yeah. With all the highs and lows in this episode, it was one hell of a roller coaster ride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's what I thought about this episode in general. It was amazing. It was, like, super thrilling and really upsetting all at the same time, you know, for all kinds of reasons, and everything that happened in it was so exciting to watch. I've seen it three times already. Couldn't take my eyes off. I loved it.
And it's cool, too, the return of Boba Fett and Fennec Shand. And, you know, we've got Bo-Katan and Ahsoka Tano. The way that this show just weaves in characters from all over Star Wars is pretty cool. I've been enjoying that a lot.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get into the top three. Who wants to go first?
Rich, you go first.
Well, let's talk about Boba Fett. Get him. You know, I think it's pretty safe to say, I think this episode probably had the highest body count. The bounty hunters and the stormtroopers playing King of the Hill was the total slaughter for the stormtroopers. Jesus, what a battle.
That's that saying, shooting fish in a barrel, comes to mind.
Right, yeah. And man, Boba Fett is really angry. He wanted to inflict so much pain on these guys, he put away his pistol and started using his, what was that thing called?
Gaffy stick, I think.
It's a gaffy stick.
Yeah, gaffy stick. And probably, I'm sure we're all going to talk about this, but it was so cool to finally see Boba Fett do his badass thing. You know, Boba Fett has been around for, geez, what, since the second episode, since the Empire Strikes Back, I think? And I mean,
yep. Officially, well, yeah, officially he was introduced in the Christmas special.
That's right.
Christmas special, is that it? Yeah. And I mean, you know, and since then there's been comics and cartoons and fan fiction, but to see him be the character that we've all wanted him to be, you know, the character that we've all imagined him to be since the original movies, it was super cool. Super cool. And the fight lasted for a long time, too. It lasted long enough for me to start thinking a little bit. And I was like, you know, these stormtroopers aren't very bright. They're getting slaughtered. They can't be that stupid. But then they retreated. And I started to think, well, maybe they were just sent there for the sole purpose of holding everybody up until the light battle cruiser showed up. I think maybe they were just there to buy some time until Gideon could release the dark troopers to get Grogu.
Yeah.
I mean, this show, you know, it wasn't intentional in the original Star Wars trilogy for the stormtroopers to be bumbling idiots, but I think they just had a bunch of soldiers, and because you wanted the main characters to live, they had to be bad shots. And so I don't think George Lucas meant for that to be funny, but it has become funny, and Jon Favreau totally plays on it by making them seem kind of dumb. And I'm sort of like, okay, this joke is getting a little old. I don't know.
You know what, though? I felt that they were slightly less useless in this episode than at other times. Like, most of the time, they're 100% useless, and now maybe it was only 95% because, like, they didn't hit much and stuff like that, and they ended up retreating and so on. But, you know, they brought out the heavy artillery. That was kind of cool, and they actually used it, and I also thought it was strange that they couldn't hit a damn thing until the Mandalorian is there. And then it seemed like every shot was like bouncing off his armor.
Right.
He was like a magnet for it. Exactly.
Because he can take it.
Maybe they like shiny things.
They do. Yeah, that's right. Very simple. Right.
Easy target.
Totally.
I started wondering about their armor. Why? I started to question what their armor's worth. I mean, it doesn't stop blasters. It doesn't stop knives. It didn't stop Boba with his gaffy stick at all. I mean,
he was shattering helmets. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome. They're not even effective against a kick or a punch. It's like, man,
yeah,
somebody wasted a lot of money on that.
I think that's another part of the joke, but you could also see it as the Empire just not really caring about all the soldiers enough to give them good equipment.
Right, they have so many of them, right? They're expendable, so
yeah.
Give them the cheapest stuff.
Mm-hmm. Maybe they just like the look.
Yeah.
Well, that was cool with Boba Fett's, I'm sorry, just one more thing. He had that, and if you guys caught it, he put his knee, he put his leg up, and little rockets came out of his knee pad.
Yeah.
That was pretty awesome.
I think that's been shown in other Star Wars media too, so it's not a new thing for this, but they always pay attention to those little details.
Yeah, and I was like, well, there's a way you want your armor back.
The knee blaster was cool. I was going to say my number three is probably Boba Fett as well. It was amazing to see him come back. And just the way they introduced the Slave One flying across the blue sky in a distance, it was so cool looking. And I just got so excited when it flew in. You know, that ship is awesome. Mm-hmm. It, for a long time, was my favorite Star Wars ship. If you'd asked me in 1985 what my favorite was, I probably would have said the Slave One. So cool to see it flying in. And then, as you said, Rich, like, Boba Fett has not lost a step. It doesn't seem like he kicked some ass and was super intense and so full of rage when he was killing those stormtroopers that I'm curious to see the story of him over the last 5 years or 6 years since we, you know, since Jedi. So that would be great too.
I know part of the story is that he must have eaten a lot of pie.
Okay, fine. He looked a little chunkier than he used to be in that armor, but whatever. Who isn't, right?
Right. I can't really point fingers.
Hey, if I put on something I was wearing 25 years ago or not that long, you know, wouldn't look so good.
Yeah, well, see, that's the thing. I loved the character. He was awesome. It makes sense he's a great fighter because his father / clone was the template for the clone warriors just because of his fighting ability, or at least that was part of it. But I mean, seeing him in his, when he first got the armor on, it did feel like it was a great impactful moment, but I was also like, oh, dad bod. And then when you think about, I mean, it reminded me of when I tried my high school prom tux on a couple of years ago. But when you think about it, it was, like you said, only 5 or 6 years ago when he fell into the Sarlacc pit, and he was slim then. So I feel like that's a little bit of a plot hole, actually.
A lot can change in 5 years.
I'm saying.
He spent a lot of time in Mos Eisley.
Right. Eating cantina food all the time. That'll fatten you up. But the knee blasters were cool. You're right. And I guess Mando replaced the rocket in Boba Fett's jetpack at some point.
Yeah.
Because remember, Timothy Oliphant shot it in the first episode.
I think he shot it twice, too. So they must have had a few replacements somehow.
I guess. Yeah, I just have to assume that. But that was a cool shot too. And a little moment of comic relief. I liked that. I was aiming at the other one. So Boba Fett, just, man, they teased us way back in episode one and he is back, baby. And he's pretty awesome.
I was a little confused though. You just mentioned, the Marshal, Cobb, the elephant. What was his name? Cobb. Yeah. I was a little confused if Boba, you know, when he showed up, he said he knew that Cobb, the Marshal back on Tatooine, had the armor, so why didn't he just take it from him?
You know, I was wondering that too, and I just thought of a possibility. Maybe Boba Fett thought that what Cobb Vanth was doing was noble, and so he let him keep it. On the other hand, it seems like Boba Fett was probably saved by the Tusken Raiders because he uses the gaffy stick and has the garb and everything. So, and we knew that Cobb Vanth, I think, was sort of hostile towards the Tusken Raiders. So I don't, that's a good question. Like maybe he just couldn't get it back from him or something. That is a question.
Right.
I mean, is the assumption or is it a known fact that Boba Fett was on the Tatooine the whole time? Like maybe he left for a while. Maybe he only recently discovered.
We don't know
who had his armor. Yeah,
that's true.
He went to the pie planet.
You and the pie.
Sorry. I'll get off that. I just ate two pies over the last week, by the way, so it's on my mind.
Oh, yeah. Nice. Happy post-Thanksgiving, you guys.
Yeah.
Okay, my turn? No, it's Chris's turn, right?
Well, no, it's your turn. Boba Fett was me again, okay. So your turn, yeah. Sweet. And if it's going to be Boba Fett, you might as well just keep going.
Mine is something I mentioned earlier. I loved how this episode raised the stakes of the story, and a lot of that was about Baby Yoda being captured, but also it reinforced how much Mando cares about Baby Yoda, because in the very first scene, he's testing whether he can use the Force to get the little ball that he loves. And when he gets it, Mando's like, Dank Ferrick. And
yeah.
I'm not exactly sure what that's about, but it seemed like he was like, okay, let me see if this is actually real, that you have this power and it wasn't just like this Jedi woman pulling something over on me or something. And when he was actually able to do it, that meant to the Mandalorian, well, okay, then I actually need to give this kid up. And he said, you know, kind of sadly, you're a very special kid and we're going to find that place you belong and they're going to take real good care of you. And then he's almost like he has to talk himself into it. You know, I can't train you. You're too powerful. I agreed to take you back to your own kind. So that's what I'm going to do. And we know agreements mean a lot to him. So I felt like he was struggling with this, you know, more than we've seen him before. He's really a father now.
I felt that scene was something I would have done. I mean, I kind of identified with when he was like, dank ferret, you know, he's like, son of a bitch, this is awesome. Because I'd be doing that all day long. I'd be like, here, Grogu, can you lift this? Hey, can you make this fly? How about this?
No, I didn't. At first, I thought he was like, God dang, that's cool. But I really, after the way the scene went from that point on, I think he was almost like bummed out. I could be wrong, but I thought he was like, because he said, no, I'm not mad at you. He didn't say, I'm not mad at you. I'm excited. He said, I'm not mad at you. I'm just, you know, realize that I have to give you up so that someone else can train you. So I think he was actually bumming out.
That's an interesting take on it, because I sort of thought, you know, maybe the dank ferric I thought maybe it was one of those expressions that you could use either way, like when you're happy and excited, like, or when you're pissed off or upset about something. But it didn't occur to me that he was genuinely upset that, you know, Grogu used the Force there, because it confirms that he has to give him away, right? And it's a complex thing for Mando, who's kind of not the most complex character when you think about it. But now all of a sudden he's like, I really care for this thing, and he's balancing between, do I keep him or do I give him away? And he kind of wants to do both. Interesting.
Yeah, that's how I read it. And he knows that, well, at least he thinks that probably the best thing is to do what he said he would do and find a Jedi to train him, right? Even though it's sad. And he's like saying, like, he feels like he has to convince Grogu too. Don't you want to learn about this Jedi stuff? So it's just kind of this sad moment where this father basically is talking to his little son about them having to separate. And then he gets captured, and he's like on a Imperial ship in shackles. So it's like, oh shit, we've never really seen that before. I mean, we did see early on when Mando gave him up and then decided, no, I'm going to come back and get him. But that was before they had this deep bond. And that was a choice that Mando made versus having him stolen away from him. So I feel like that was really cool to have it, the stakes raised in that way. And horrifying, and I can't wait. I want it probably more than any episode I've ever seen. I wanted to see the next one right now.
Right.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
And then I really did feel for you guys when the Razor Crest exploded. I was like, oh man. And that raised the stakes too, because that ship, I mean, the show really, the objects become really important. The armor, the ship, even the spear and everything, the little ball, and the ship was important and a big part of him. So it was a big deal to have it obliterated. And I thought Mando's reaction was funny. They just sort of lingered on him staring at the spot where the ship used to be. It reminded me of something out of the Far Side or something.
I just imagined a single tear rolling down his face
inside his mask helmet.
No one will ever see it, but he knows it's there.
And then we see Moff Gideon on the bridge of his cruiser, and one of his underlings says, direct hit, and we see him smiling. And I thought that was it was cool to give him that, because it makes Moff Gideon feel like a more formidable villain to have, you know, wounded Mandalorian in that way. And I love that for Giancarlo Esposito and everything. So I just thought, even though who knows? I kind of hope that Mandalorian actually ends up getting the Slave One, like Boba Fett gives it to him or something. That'd be kind of cool. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe he'll just get another Razor Crest. You never know.
I don't know. They've sort of replaced the Razor Crest with the Slave One already, in a way, right? It's like, that's the ship that shows up, and the Razor Crest gets destroyed, and what he's on. So I was thinking the same thing. I wouldn't be too surprised if if somehow this show gives us the end of Boba Fett and the Mandalorian takes on his his ship as his own. As kind of sad as that will be, but it'll also be.
Or maybe Boba Fett will retire and give it to him or something. I don't know. That sounds silly, but you never know.
Or maybe the Mandalorian will be killed and the show will just follow Boba Fett from now on.
There were rumors of a Boba Fett miniseries, so I don't know. Now that I've seen this episode, I'm a little more open to that because he's clearly his own character.
Yeah, for sure. How you mentioned the little silver ball when he picks it up out of the dirt. I mean, how amazing
Best
is it?
Ball.
The amount, the Beskar ball. How amazing. It's not Beskar the ball,
I'm
is it?
No, I'm just kidding. I don't know.
Right. No, it should be because that's a good name. I was going to say, how amazing is it the amount of emotion they wrapped up in a tiny little ball that you think is just a joke, and now all of a sudden Baby Yoda's gone, and all he has left is this little ball that he knows he'd like to play with. I thought the show was great. It did an amazing job with that ball.
It would be like if Nico got kidnapped and I picked up the Nintendo Switch.
His favorite possession.
Yeah. A little hard to swallow.
Yeah. Right. Okay, where are we? Rich, number two.
So, Moff Gideon. I thought his interaction with Grogu at the end was pretty fascinating, so I went back and watched it a few times, you know, and Gideon says, you've gotten good at that, when he sees, you know, Grogu playing with the stormtroopers and the Force. And he also knows it makes him tired. And all that was kind of funny, but it was a little concerning to me because I instantly remembered back to when Ahsoka said that, you know, Baby Yoda, Grogu is full of fear and he could easily turn to the dark side. And what he was doing to those stormtroopers tossing him around was, I was like, that's maybe a bad sign. And then Gideon shows him the dark saber and asks if you've ever seen one of these. And I was thinking, what's that all about? And when Grogu tries to use the Force, you can see Gideon shake a little bit before he says, ah, ah, ah. So, you know, he was still trying to use the Force, but he was just too tired. And I wonder, it made me wonder how much Gideon knows about the Force, you know, or if he's just...
Is he a Force user maybe, himself?
Yeah, you know what's behind? What's his motivation here? Or if he's just recalling their time together from before when he had Grogu as a prisoner before.
I mean... When he was smiling at what Grogu was doing, especially the Force choke that Grogu did, he did that once before with Cara Dune when he thought Cara was a threat to Mando.
Yeah.
And that's always known as a dark side power. And so when you put that all together about Ahsoka Tano saying he's got a lot of fear and anger in him, that's also something that's been said about people who are susceptible to the dark side or potentially, you know, going to go over to the dark side. So I think that's what they're really playing up with Baby Yoda, is that he could go to the dark side. And I think when Moff Gideon smiled at what he was seeing, it made me think of the Emperor going, yes, give in to your anger.
Right.
You know? And so maybe he wants him to go to the dark side. Why would he want that? Maybe to use him as a weapon, the same way, you know, same reason the Emperor wanted Luke to go over to the dark side.
Sure.
But do you guys think any of this is on a conscious level with Baby Yoda, or is he still simply just experimenting with different things he can do? You know, like I sort of looked at the scene where he was playing with those stormtroopers, flinging them around, as almost like just, I can do this and it's kind of fun. And now I'll try choking and now I'll try, you know, slamming you against the wall kind of thing. Do you guys think there's any conscious level there to what Baby Yoda's doing, light side, dark side?
I think he's feeling threatened, and he's lashing out. And I think he's young and impressionable and not formed yet. And so I feel like what they're getting at is that he could be directed down the dark path.
Right. Mm-hmm. And regardless, even if he is just acting out of instinct or, you know, for... you know, emotion. It's going to start him on the path. That's what I was thinking.
Right. It's one way or the other, right? He might, even if he just thinks it's fun right now to choke them, that's going down the wrong path.
But I don't think he was playing or having fun there. I think he's scared to death.
Yeah, well,
I think he's
aware
that he's captured. That's what I think. I think he's aware and he's upset and scared and wants his Mando back.
I think you're probably right. I think he's aware that he's upset that he's been separated from the person who he has a bond with, who he sees as a protector, I think. Whether he understands the concept of captured or danger or anything like that, I'm not so sure.
That's where we disagree. I feel like he really sees these guys as enemies. He wouldn't hurt somebody like that just for fun. Unless it was a frog egg, I guess.
I mean, on a basic level, he probably has more fun with Mando than he does with Gideon. So,
yeah. And, you know, I said that, but like he's witnessed a lot of those guys in white suits shooting at Mando. So he probably does have some idea that they're dangerous. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'm, ascribing a little too much awareness to him there, but I do feel like he doesn't think he's in a good situation.
No, probably. I mean, that's an instinctual thing too, mm-hmm. to know when you're in danger. I mean, across humans, all animals. So,
yeah.
I do think the scene itself though was played a little bit for, a little bit lighthearted because
I laughed. Yeah. You hear screaming, you open the door and he's throwing them all around. I thought definitely
it's funny. And yeah. I think the audience might've needed it too, to be quite honest with you. Like my daughter was in tears when he was kidnapped or captured.
Oh no.
Like so upset, you know,
those and big black evil robots.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then she sees that and it was a little bit of, at least he has that. It's kind of funny, you know? So it was a little bit of both, I think.
Yeah, totally. I think they did that just for your daughter, you know, and kids.
Yeah,
like her.
Exactly. Well, kids. Cause when that happened, people. My wife was like, damn it. Why did you make me watch this episode? I didn't make you watch it.
2/3 of the people in my house that watch this show have said, if anything happens to Baby Yoda, we're done. We're out. So
it was.
I figure they must, the makers of the show must know that too.
Yeah, absolutely. He'll be fine.
He will.
Where are we? I'm kind of lost.
I think it's me now.
Yeah, you're number two.
It sort of expands, Jason, a little bit on what you were talking about with Mando's character and just how there's some real conflict and challenge on the show now. You know, I feel like after watching this, Mando's kind of had it sort of easy in a lot of ways. He flies around, he helps people with their problems in exchange for information, and then sort of moves on to the next place. But not anymore. Now he's been stripped
he's
down.
Lost something.
Yeah, exactly. He's had something taken away and he's just stripped down to his most basic traits. He's got his creed and his armor left. Those are the two most defining things about his character. Everything else has been taken away and we're going to see really what he's made of, I think, now. So I think this is almost like the rock bottom point for this character. You know, you can't hurt him anymore without actually killing him. And we're going to have to see how he reacts. So it's all wrapped into raising the stakes, as you were talking about, but this is probably the most, the lowest point for Mando and maybe the most interesting thing that's happened to him in, you know, two seasons of the TV show. So I'm excited to see where it goes and how he reacts.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, my number two is just some great moments. I've said it a lot of times. I think this is a show about cool moments. That's kind of, it's just cool moment after cool moment. And so here's a few. When he said to Baby Yoda at the beginning, after they were circling around the Jedi ruins and the Seeing Stone, we're going to have to travel the last stretch with the windows down. And then you see them flying. I just kind of like that moment. All of a sudden, he's Superman.
Yeah, cut to jetpack. I love that too.
Right, and little Grogu's ears flapping in the wind. That was funny.
Yeah.
I was wondering, does he have the ship on autopilot? But I guess he landed it and then flew to the thing. When Mando was waiting for something to happen after he put Grogu on the Seeing Stone, he's like, come on. They said Ahsoka said you would take it from here. Then we see the Slave One fly by. I was like, yeah, because same with me. I mean, that's one of my favorite ships in all of Star Wars. Probably right behind the X-Wing fighter. X-Wing fighter than Slave One. I don't know, but it's really cool. And they did such a good job because Boba Fett, I mean, he basically had no story. He was in the holiday Christmas special and he had a toy and he became like the most popular character. And it was mostly just because of his mystery, but also his cool armor. And so they gave him a cool ship to go with it. And I thought it was really cool. You said that was your favorite ship, Chris, but what is there something else that's your favorite now?
Well, no, I can't say it's not my favorite ship. I just have different love for a lot of different Star Wars ships.
There's so many.
I'm kind of a ship guy, at least when it comes to Star Wars. There was a while where the Imperial shuttle was my favorite ship because I just loved the way the wings folded down into like a triangle shape. But the Slave One, I was one of those kids that was immediately captivated by Boba Fett too, and that included his ship. So
cool. I really liked the B-Wing fighter.
Yeah.
Put several models of the B-Wing fighter together. And check this out. I collected models for a long time when I was younger, and I actually have an MPC plastic model kit of the Slave One, which I've been holding on to. MPC is no longer in business. And so I'm like, this might be the time to put it together.
Yeah, absolutely.
You should do it, man. Can I come over?
Yeah.
That is. And I like how it flies vertically and then it lands horizontally, and I think his seat rotates as the ship rotates, so he's always, you know, right side up.
Yep.
Inside. I like the whole concept of Baby Yoda being all meditative on the seeing stone and communing with the Force with this aura around him while this bounty hunter fights people off with his laser gun. It's just Star Wars is this like delicious combination of sci-fi fantasy and magical mysticism. And this is sort of a personification of that. I like how the Force and the sci-fi part meld together. And that's why I always hated the midichlorians. It kind of ruins that.
It does. I enjoyed how Mando tried three times to push his way through the Force aura thing or whatever he was creating, and he couldn't do it. He's like, I'll just try again. Maybe it'll work this time.
Yeah. It was interesting when you asked our question of the week too, because I was thinking about the blue Force, you know, energy that you could see coming off the rock. And I was like, I wonder what kind of Force power that is. Do you think it's like Force sight or far seeing maybe?
What you mean, what he's doing or the actual
Cause he's reaching out, right? He's announcing himself basically is what he's doing.
It's like the telepathy thing. I think it's more like just communing, trying to contact another Jedi.
No, telepathy. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But there were, if you go to Wikipedia and look up the Force, there's so many more different little permutations of Force powers on there. We would have been here all day just doing that one. I thought it was pretty cool to see Boba Fett smashing stormtrooper helmets with his Tusken Raider gaffy stick.
Man,
I loved watching the stormtrooper helmets like splinter into little pieces too. Yeah. And usually they just get hit with a blaster and fall down, but this seemed so much more brutal, you know?
Yeah
it was. And they showed for an instant, maybe 2 seconds on screen, they showed that one stormtrooper that had fallen after he bashed him in the head and his leg was mangled. All mangled and his head was all mangled. And I was like, damn.
The Dark Troopers, Gideon says, have the Dark Troopers been engaged? Momentarily, sir. And then we see these like stiff red-eyed black droids flying down in formation with jet fire coming from their boots. They just seem so much more imposing than the stormtroopers, like a bunch of evil Iron Men or something. They remind me of Iron Man.
Yep, the way they flew was a very Iron Man-y.
But they didn't do anything except grab Baby Yoda. I still thought they were cool, but it just makes me feel like we've got more to see from them, probably in the finale, not next week.
Are they 100% droid, or is there any human to them at all?
I don't know.
From the waist down, they were. I don't know about if they had like a human brain or something.
Yeah, because a couple, the episode that I wasn't on that Eric subbed in, that was the one where we saw them lined up on Moff Gideon's ship. And there was speculation that maybe he's injecting them with Baby Yoda's blood to make these force powered troops or something. But I guess I thought, they're droids, so that's theory's not right. But maybe if they are part human, that still could be true.
If there's a little RoboCop thing there, yeah, where there's a little bit little human in there and mostly droid, yeah.
It's like General Grievous, you know, he had the four arms and he fought Obi-Wan and he was just, what, heart, lungs, and a brain.
Right.
Yeah. I liked, this is a small thing, but when they first cut to the Imperial cruiser, Gideon's Imperial cruiser, when he had a conversation about, I think, that the tracking beacon had been placed on Mando's ship, it was mid hyperspace. And I just thought that was cool. I'm like, yeah, I guess they do spend a lot of time in hyperspace, but it was like a quiet mid hyperspace moment. I like that for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah. And they're getting so good at making these ships look giant. You know,
That's one thing Star Wars has always done really well, I think.
Yeah, special effects. You can see the front of the ship better, and the back of the ship is a little foggy because of the atmosphere. It's like, dang.
And then last for my, you know, this item is about great moments. And I did love when Gideon went to check on Baby Yoda. You hear screams, door slide open, and he's just tossing these stormtroopers around like nothing. That was just an amazing moment because I thought it was funny, but it was also like, oh, the poor guy when Gideon comes up and gets in his face. And I'm really not sure what the point was of showing him the darksaber. Just to remind us he had it or something. I don't really know why.
Right. Was there a story reason for it, or is it just so we would remember? Yeah.
Or was there some like force exchange going on between them, or who knows? Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, it made me wonder how much Gideon knows about that, about Grogu's history, where he comes from, he's seen, what he knows.
Yeah, or if he just is in it for the blood. Like, he said to that admiral or whatever, send the encrypted message that we have the donor. So he's he's really focused on that, the sort of blood force thing.
Yeah, that's like the main plan with him, is somehow using his blood. And they said that other donors have not fared well. So it's some kind of experimentation going on and people are dying because of it. But it's part of some evil plan.
It wouldn't be the Empire if there wasn't an evil plan.
Okay, Rich, number one.
Number one, so with all the tragedy that befell Mando in this episode, there is, I think, maybe a little ray of light. And that is, he gets to put together a team.
Yes, sir.
Woo! And I was thinking of you, Chris. I was like, you know, this next episode, I think the next episode is going to be him, you know, maybe going around asking others for help. Go retrieve Grogu, and it's going to be another, sure, we'll help you, but first.
Maybe. It's funny, my sort of what comes next and putting together the team was my number one too. But I think the next episode is probably going to be them going to break out Miggs Mayfield, the guy in prison from season one.
Bill Burr.
Because, right.
Yeah, that's right. I don't mean to derail you there, Rich, but I feel like this show, all of a sudden, we know it's sort of a Western, but he's putting together a team like the Magnificent Seven. And when you count up the characters, you have Mando, Boba Fett, Fennec Shand, Cara Dune, Ahsoka Tano, Bo-Katan, and Miggs Mayfield. That's seven right there.
Nice.
Right.
And if any of them don't, come, maybe Greef Karga will join them. So it's going to be great, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. Next week will be, you can see from Cara Dune's little readout that I looked it up online that Mayfeld's been sentenced to 5 years at the Carthon Chop Fields.
Yeah.
Whatever that is.
Sounds like a hard labor camp something. Yeah.
So, I think that's going to be next week's episode. And then the week after that, it'll be a big showdown with Gideon.
Let's hope it's like a 90-minute episode or something in the final.
It cracked me up, too. They were talking about Miggs Mayfield, explaining that he was an Imperial sharpshooter. And I was like, excuse me? He was an Imperial sharpshooter? What does that mean? He's, like, just okay with a blaster? He could hit the broadside of a barn, maybe?
I think Mando joked about that, too, with him. They actually joked about it when he teased him about it during that prison escape episode last season.
Imperial sharpshooter, you're the only one.
Yeah, something like that.
Right, I agree with your list too, Chris. He's already got Boba Fett and Fennec Shand, so they're gonna go get Miggs probably. I was curious to know if they're going to get the other two guys, you know, the lady and the huge guy with the horns, the super strong dude. I don't know if they're going to be part of
it
either.
I doubt it.
But then Bo-Katan, it did surprise me a little bit. They're going to go back to season one to get some characters there. Cause I was thinking, well, you got them, but then you got Grief and Kara, but Kara is now a marshal. So, you know, on the legit side, but then you got Cobb Vanth too. And I was like, well, what if they go back to Cobb Vanth and get him?
Maybe.
And then of course you got whichever Jedi that heard Grogu's little
Luke
call,
Skywalker.
You know, they might show up too. Hopefully, you know, cross your fingers. But it's going to be a hell of a final, I hope.
That's a wrench for sure for me. It's like I listed all those characters. I'm like, there's the team. But then I started thinking, yeah, but who did Grogu summon on that rock? Like, that's a totally unknown who's going to show up.
Because it seemed like everyone but a Jedi showed up.
Exactly. And then will the actual New Republic get involved? You know, I mean, they're the government right now. They have their own military. I mean, if the Empire is back, you think they're going to want to be involved in shutting that down. So there's still a lot of things that could be happening here.
That's a good point. You know, they could be going, they could be doing their thing, they could be getting themselves in trouble, and then boom, the New Republic shows up.
Right.
Day.
Or think about it. Cara Dune is in the New Republic now. She's the connection. So maybe the team is the small little infiltration team that goes down to Endor while the rest of the government is fighting a huge battle in space. Like,
right.
Could be. Yeah.
That sounds pretty Star Wars-y.
That would be cool.
When he said, so you've gone legit, she said, she was sort of trying to tamp that down a little bit. Like, you could say that or something. So that makes me feel like maybe she would be one of the team. If there's a Jedi that heard, I don't think that Jedi's going to show up and suddenly be on Mando's team. I feel like that might be, if we're doing predictions, the Jedi shows up once the dust settles at the very end of the season finale, and that sort of leads into the next season, maybe.
Oh, man, that would suck.
But you know what? Sounds kind of likely.
Right. That's why I'm saying that. I'm like, that's probably what's going to happen. That's going to suck. More lightsabers, please.
And then the final question I had is, you know, they're going after Gideon and their plans, but is Gideon the guy at the top of the Imperial food chain right now? I don't think so, because don't forget that Ahsoka Tano is looking for Grand Admiral Thrawn.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's probably the real head, the real big bad. And I don't think he'll factor in much to this season, but maybe he's sort of a factor leading into the next season too.
Exactly.
So,
that's what I think
on.
Too.
And two, you know, like, I always felt pretty dissatisfied with the First Order and just the thinness of the whole concept and everything, and Snoke. And there's a part of me that's like, maybe the Mandalorian can help fill in the details of that to make it more satisfying. And that would be cool. And then there's another part that's like, don't even go near that crap and just don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, tell your own story. I don't know which one I would like better. I guess either one could be cool, because I really trust Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni to do either, whatever.
I do think that it has to... It doesn't have to be what we see on The Mandalorian doesn't have to play a huge part in that, but it has to acknowledge it. So
yeah,
fit I hope into for it. For your sake, Jason, I hope this just adds to it and makes it. Makes
I think
it
will
for you.
Yeah,
good. I prefer a deep dive, because it's the same thing that the Clone Wars did. You know, they really explored and explained in detail how Anakin Skywalker turned to the dark side,
which added to the whole thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, it made it a lot more clearer, and it made it a lot more believable. And you were just like, oh my God, you know, a lot more emotional. So I think if they do this, because Snoke was, it was kind of a weird thing. He was there and then he was not there. So,
and then in Rise of Skywalker, they showed him in these clone chambers that made it seem like the Emperor had created Snoke as a clone. And so people are theorizing, I think, that the Baby Yoda blood experiment ties into that, that maybe the experiments will lead to the creation of Snoke.
Or the Emperor.
And I don't hate that idea. I think that's an okay idea. You know, it's an unexpected outcome from what the Empire's original idea was. And sometimes things just go that way. I think it could work.
Yeah. Okay. My turn.
See.
Yeah. Okay. So lore and callbacks. So featuring Boba Fett is significant because Boba Fett is the character that inspired everything else Mandalorian in the Star Wars universe, including this series, of course. And I was thinking about it, even though in our, you know, real time, the real world, Stormtrooper armor was conceived of by Star Wars designers or whoever before Boba Fett was a character, in story, the armor is actually an evolution of the Mandalorian armor, because Jango was the first, you know, clone template. He was a Mandalorian who, or that's sort of arguable, but I'll get into that. But he had Mandalorian armor, and the clone trooper outfits were modeled after the Mandalorian armor with that T-shaped visor and everything. You can see that it's a lot closer if you go back to the Clone Wars and look at the clone trooper armor, and then the Stormtrooper armor is like a later iteration of that. So it's all sort of related to the Mandalorian.
Very cool.
Mandalorian's got the upper hand on that.
Yeah, he's got the better deal. They didn't have a Beskar to go around.
Right. Well, let's just use plastic instead.
There's plenty of that. Balsa wood. Temuera Morrison plays Boba Fett. This actor, of course, is very familiar to Clone Wars fans because, well, first he played Jango in Attack of the Clones, and then he played all the clones in the Republic Army in the Clone Wars. It was just a voice since it was CG, but it was his image. And Boba Fett is a clone of him. It's considered his son. I think they said that was a gift to him for being a part of the whole creation of the clone army. He died in battle, in the Battle of Geonosis in Attack of the Clones. Somebody chopped his head off. I can't remember. Do we know who? I should have looked that up. But
isn't it Mace Windu?
Maybe it was. Yeah, I think it was. Maybe that'll tie in somehow. What if Mace Windu is the Jedi that comes to save Baby Yoda, and then Boba Fett's like, you killed my father.
Yeah, because he's still alive, huh? Isn't he still alive?
Well, he got thrown out a window on Coruscant by the Emperor, and I think he's presumed dead, but we don't know for sure. You know how it is with Star Wars.
I hadn't thought about that.
Presumed dead doesn't mean anything.
Yeah.
Not in this universe.
And we saw young Boba Fett pick up his helmet with maybe his head inside in that battle. And then, of course, Boba Fett went on to become this bounty hunter, ended up in the Sarlacc pit in Return of the Jedi. And he had some scars on his face, which maybe is from the Sarlacc pit or his time as a bounty hunter. I don't think we've ever seen his face since he was a boy in anything.
No, he looked pretty beat up.
We see
he's got some miles on his face.
Boba Fett's ship, Slave One, which was his father's ship. And it's a modified Fire Spray 31 class patrol and attack craft, which Jango stole and outfitted with a bunch of laser cannons and stuff.
Nice.
It's been unclear about whether Boba Fett's father, Jango Fett, was actually a real Mandalorian. In the Clone Wars TV show, Almec, the Prime Minister of Mandalore, said he wasn't a Mandalorian. He was just a common bounty hunter, and he didn't know how he got the armor. But in this episode, Boba Fett says, my chain code has been encoded in this armor for 25 years. And then he shows he's talking about Jango Fett. This is my father, Jango Fett. Mando says, your father was a foundling, which we know right. Mando was a foundling. Boba Fett says, yes, he even fought in the Mandalorian Civil Wars, which there's been a lot of Mandalorian kind of Civil War-y kind of things, but this one happened before the Phantom Menace. Mando says, then that armor belongs to you. So Mando seems to accept at least Jango Fett as Mandalorian, and that it's right that if his father passes it on to his son, that that's okay according to the Mandalorian creed. But I think there's a discrepancy. Some think you need to be born on Mandalore to be considered Mandalorian, but Mando has a different idea. In the season one finale, he said, I was not born on Mandalore. Mandalorian isn't a race. It's a creed. I was a foundling. They raised me in the fighting corps. I was treated as one of their own. When I came of age, I was sworn to the creed. So I think that's sort of the same as Jango Fett's story. So that's why he identifies with that. And that was enough for him.
I'm glad they did that, because now, you know, it's kind of like you clear the air. Okay, I can trust you.
Yeah. It legitimizes
it's all water
everyone.
Behind the bridge.
Yeah.
So to speak.
When Boba Fett said, I want my armor that you got from Cobb Vanth back on Tatooine. It belongs to me. Mando says, are you Mandalorian? Boba Fett says, I'm just a simple man making his way in the galaxy like my father before me. That line is a callback to two different things. In Attack of the Clones, when Obi-Wan said to Jango Fett, your clones are very impressive. You must be very proud. Jango said, I'm just a simple man trying to make my way in the universe. That's,
you know what though? I'm thinking now, Chris, remember a couple episodes ago you were talking about Bo-Katan and you were like, well, she doesn't wear her helmet. She's kind of doing her own thing. And now you got Boba Fett. He's not wearing his helmet because he's, you know, doing his own thing. And it's like, oh, I don't know. What are they going to make him take off his helmet? Is Mando going to take off his helmet?
What I like about it all is that they're just adding complexity to what it means to be Mandalorian. If it's just about being from the planet or if it's a creed or if it's some combination of both, and how, like, it's evolved in a way too. Bo-Katan thinks of herself as Mandalorian, but she approaches it a different way than our Mando does. So it's all, I just like how it's becoming more complex, to be honest with you. And you're right though. I think maybe they're working towards the Mandalorian, our main character, kind of updating a little bit and at some point taking the helmet off and it not being a big deal.
Yeah. Like the kid that goes out into the world and says, you know, and sees that, oh, there's other ways to look at this. There's another whole perspective.
Yeah. There's a whole world out there. And the more I think about it, it doesn't bother me. Like if you'd asked me in season one, should he ever take his helmet off? I would have said, nope, that is the way it is. This is a Mandalorian, but I'm willing to evolve a little bit too. So if they end up going that way and it's still cool, I will be okay with it.
Yeah, I think I will too. And about it being them sort of deepening the complexity of it, I mean, I think there's a pretty good chance that came about because there were just inconsistencies in the storytelling over the years, you know, different people telling stories, but it totally mirrors the way that things are with religions now.
Yeah.
There's so many different sects and different, offshoots and things and more cult-like, orthodox versions. And so it totally mirrors the way those things go in real life.
Yeah. Nothing is that simple. It all, things change. And when you have a whole galaxy of people all over the place, so many different experiences, like things splinter are just going to change. Right. Yeah, exactly. Makes sense.
I still have mixed feelings about it. I don't want him to take off his helmet.
I'm not surprised, Rich.
I mean, if he does, it's like in this episode, right? I imagine when he was staring at the loss of his ship, I imagined a little tear rolling down his face. I won't be able to do that anymore if they show us his face.
You won't be able to imagine it if you're seeing
it. No, they're just going to show me what it should be. And I'm going to be like, but I liked my imagination better.
Okay, what if they just make the screen black the whole time and you just hear sounds? Then you can imagine all of it.
When his helmet's off, it'll always be from the back. So you just see the back of his head the whole time.
That's kind of like a podcast, right?
But I don't know if you caught what I was just saying, that line he said, Boba Fett said, I'm just a simple man making his way in the galaxy like my father before me. That's a combination of two callbacks. When Jango said to Obi-Wan, I'm a simple man trying to make my way in the universe. He was there, little Boba, heard his dad say that. So it seems like he took it to heart.
Right.
And then in Return of the Jedi, Luke said to the Emperor, I'll never turn to the dark side. You failed, Your Highness. I am a Jedi like my father before me.
I recognize the Luke part. I didn't recognize the first part.
Me neither. Cool. Yeah, I had to look it up. So, but Mando, I mean, Boba Fett makes it clear he's not, like Mando says, did you take the creed? And Fett says, I give my allegiance to no one. So it is complicated, but I guess ultimately the Mandalorian decides it's that Jango Fett served during the Mandalorian Civil War and he passed this along to his son. So that's okay with me. Boba Fett mentioned his chain code has been encoded in the armor for 25 years. The chain code was also somehow part of the tracking fobs Mando used to track bounties. So maybe it's sort of like a social security number, you know, an identifier. There was one website that translated that code that was sort of being projected holographically out of his wrist device. Foundling took into the year the Concorde Dawn, which was the planet Jango was from, Mentor Jaster, Father Fett, Boba Fett. So Jaster, there's this Legends comic where this Mandalorian Jaster saves young Jango Fett, adapts and trains him. So it all, it's just all this identifying information, I guess.
I didn't realize that that code was actually translatable. Like, it's like Star Wars has made it a real language, sort of.
I think if you can believe this website I was reading, each symbol translates to an English letter. So that's how.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm.
Sounds like Klingon.
Yeah. Oh, really? Similar. Translates right over.
Yeah, it's a real language now. You can actually speak it.
Yeah.
Right.
Hawk. Hakaruda. So we had speculated who was the mysterious figure that approached Fennec Shand after she got shot in the stomach at the end of the episode in season one.
Right.
It's Boba Fett. We know.
Yeah.
And now she has cybernetic implants in her stomach, which kind of looked similar to what you could see in Luke's wrist at the end of Empire Strikes Back when he got his hand replaced and he was moving his fingers back and forth. And that's a total Star Wars thing. As you mentioned, Rich, General Grievous, or maybe it was Chris, is mostly machine. And Vader, too, after Obi-Wan chopped him up on Mustafar, he's a lot like half machine, I guess, or maybe more.
Right.
Pretty cool tech when you think about it. You can stick some stuff in there and you're good to go.
Why do you have to get injured first, though? Why can't you just upgrade?
Yeah. Right. I want one of those hands that shoots off with little rockets behind it. Can punch people in the
face. I want hands for feet. I think that would be awesome.
And feet for hands?
No, just four hands.
Oh, okay. Like an ape or a monkey.
You're like a monkey, that's right.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
I think it's interesting that the Mandalorian is kind of like about bounty hunter morality or mercenary morality on the fringes of the galaxy. Like Fennec Shand, when he met her, she was his bounty and she was an assassin and worked for Crime Syndicate. He was supposed to take her in, but now she's in Boba Fett's service and because he saved her life. And I think Mandalorian feels bad about what happened. So he says he owes her too. And now they can all work together.
It's cool. It's a fun system, right? Where you can be totally after someone. And as long as there's some sort of resolution to that, there's like no hard feelings. And then you can work together like the next day. So right. That's just how it goes.
It's sort of bound together by these agreements. So that's the only way that you can trust people is if you know that they keep their contracts and their agreements, you know?
Right.
Otherwise you can't trust anybody.
Yeah.
And it reminds me in Empire Strikes Back, Boba Fett was hired to capture Han Solo. And we saw him as an evil person, a bad guy. But now after watching all of this, it's like he had a contract. It was nothing personal against Han Solo.
No, not at all. He was doing a job.
Yeah.
Right?
He's doing the job he was paid to do. The Seeing Stone. We've seen architecture like the Seeing Stone in various ancient Jedi sites. Like there's these round designed areas in Knights of the Old Republic, the video game, Jedi temples and stages and things. And then in the real world, it reminds you of like Stonehenge, right? In England. And there's a bunch of stone circles like that in England, not just Stonehenge. Henge theorized that there are places to do spiritual rituals and commune with gods and things.
I was wondering to myself if that's a real place, or did they have to make that for the show? Because it's very specific, but it could exist, I suppose.
I keep wondering, I wonder where they filmed this. And I'm like, oh yeah, in that digital studio.
there's that too, yeah. It felt like a real environment though. Like that, the whole fight, I thought it was actually on a side of a hill somewhere.
I know. Yeah. I think it's all in the digital studio, but it could be modeled after a real place.
Sure. Yeah.
And then in The Last Jedi, the temple where Luke is, it's an ancient temple on Octu or whatever. It had a rock that Luke and Rey used to reach out to the Force. And then Luke sits on it and projects his image across the galaxy. I think that whole Seeing Stone concept is meant to reflect that, you know, similar kind of idea.
Yeah.
Maybe Luke will show up.
And your head will explode, Rick.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
Stormtrooper, one of them has this orange shoulder covering. That means he's a commander, which was seen throughout Star Wars. This big rock that Fennec Shand pushes down and it crushes a bunch of stormtroopers. Some thought that was an homage to Raiders of the Lost Ark, maybe.
Right.
Also, it's similar to the tactics used by the Ewoks.
I thought it was hilarious how the guy kept shooting the rock. He's yeah. like, I know, I can break it down into smaller pieces. Boom, 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 boom. I'm like, that's something nope. I would do and it'd probably Smangish. Be dead.
It reminded me of Indiana Jones for sure. Yeah. But whether that was intentional or not, I don't know. It was pretty quick, right? Whereas with Indiana Jones, it's chasing him for a while.
Yeah. And they didn't do as well as Indiana did.
No, that's true.
Moff Gideon calls, I think it's the first time we've actually heard these black troopers called Dark Troopers. They appeared in Star Wars Dark Forces video game first, and then they've been in other games like Battlefront. What I read is they're droids. I forgot about this when we were talking about before. Engineered okay. to be the next generation of stormtroopers. So who knows?
Yeah. I mean, why would you not go with droids when droid technology is so good in this universe? You might as well create the best droid soldiers you can.
Although I read an article that thought it was sort of ironic that they started out with droid armies and then they moved to clones and now back to droids.
Right.
Droids are better.
Boba Fett says, this isn't a spice dream. Spice is a Star Wars drug. Han Solo used to smuggle it.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Spice run. Let's see. Oh, yeah. One of the stormtroopers shot Baby Yoda with the stun setting with this round blue blast.
Right.
And we saw a stormtrooper use that on Leia in A New Hope right after she recorded the message to, you know, with R2.
Yeah. Right. I remembered that.
And then he gets little manacles put on him at the end and they're glowing blue. And maybe those look similar to what Count Dooku used to suspend Obi-Wan back in Attack of the Clones. Maybe they can inhibit the Force or something.
Oh my God. You just triggered something, Jay.
What?
You said Leia. Didn't Luke train Leia to be a Jedi?
Ooh.
What if she shows up?
That would be awesome. Then I'd be like, well, my if you head would have explode. Leia, just why not have Luke? That's what I would feel like.
What if they come together?
Yep.
The Osmonds showing up.
The whole family.
I don't want to get into all that. That's good enough for this time. It was a lot.
It's tons.
Short episode, too.
Yeah, it was. It's amazing how much action they've put into that short episode.
Yeah. Okay, let's do notes. Rich, you got any?
Oh, my gosh. I think we pretty much covered it all. I do have something here about Cara Dune accepting the badge after all. I think we all thought she wasn't going to.
I called it. Come on.
You did, Jason. You called it. Oh, he did. As soon as I saw it. Yeah.
Yeah, that's it for me.
The only note I had that we haven't already talked about is I found it fascinating when Boba Fett's in the Slave One chasing the troopers as they fly back up to the ship, and he realizes it's an Empire ship, and he says, they're back, the Empire. And she says, who? And he says, the Empire, they're back. And I just found it interesting that nobody seems to know that the Empire is still around or back, right? And I guess this is all brand new, right? They were eliminated. And they've been sort of working under the radar for a long time, but suddenly here they are. But it was an interesting, I thought it was a neat line just to remind us that everyone's like, everything's great. There's no more Empire, yet there still seems to be a pretty big one.
Out of sight, out of mind, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, that's what sort of makes me think maybe this series will explore the origins of the First Order. Maybe.
Yeah.
Because they're focusing on the Empire being back. Okay. We didn't mention it, but this episode was directed by Robert Rodriguez, which is pretty cool.
Well, yeah, that's right.
Who did From Dusk Till Dawn.
Sure.
I mean, El Mariachi, old movie, Sin City. He did Sin City, didn't he? Planet Terror. He did that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Planet Terror, yeah.
And then Spy Kids.
Spy Kids, yeah.
Yeah.
Alita Battle Angel was a big one that he did recently.
Right on.
Yeah, he said he's friends with Jon Favreau. Called him up to fill a hole in the schedule. He was stoked to be on there. I was thinking, I've met a few of the people. I might have mentioned this before. I'm a name dropper, but Rich and I went to school with Tim Oliphant. I met Ming-Na Wen, who plays Fennec Shand at a Walker Stalker, and she was really, really cool, really nice person, very, you know, friendly and engaged and stuff, funny. Really funny, actually. You'd be surprised, because on S.H.I.E.L.D. and in this, she plays kind of badasses, but she's like just joking around and being goofy and stuff in real life.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I've met Giancarlo Esposito many times, because he used to come to Walker Stalker and I would moderate his panels, and I love his character in Breaking Bad. So I had a lot of questions for him. And afterwards he said, you're doing a good job here. You know, way to go. So that was really nice. Made me feel good.
Isn't that great? I love it when that happened, when I used to do panels.
Yeah, totally. There was a lot of Baby Yoda cuteness in this episode. I liked when he was trying to grab a butterfly when Mando put him on the stone. It's totally familiar as a parent. It's like, we're here for a reason.
Yeah. I don't want to be all day. Like, quit looking at butterflies. Come on.
Focus.
And I notice he kind of purrs sometimes. He's like, brr, brr. It's cute. And then and this is cute in a horrible way, but after he finished throwing all those stormtroopers around, he was kind of wheezing from exhaustion. I was like, oh.
I didn't like that. Yeah. It sounded like he was in trouble, you know?
Right. So. Yeah. Poor little guy. And then the only other thing is, I felt like it was a bit contrived that Mando had to put down the jetpack to make Fennec Shand put down the gun. You put down your gun, I'll put down my jetpack. It felt like maybe a way to get it so he wouldn't be able to just fly after Baby Yoda when he was captured.
Yeah, it totally was, right? They needed him to not be able to fly. I was wondering the same thing when I watched it, but I kind of explained it to myself in that Boba Fett at that moment probably considered the jetpack a big advantage, right? If they were going to actually have a fight,
the high ground.
To have the high ground or just be able to fly around them, right?
It's,
he can't hit a guy with a gaffy stick who's flying around with a jetpack. And so they needed, it sort of made sense to me in that, but the show really needed Mando to not be able to fly for the rest of the episode too. So
I don't think they showed him pick it up again either. So I wonder if he doesn't have it now, or they just didn't bother showing that.
He's got to have it. He wouldn't. I mean, it also didn't get destroyed when the Razor Crest was blown up,
right.
So
like the only thing he's got left.
Yeah. That's right. I hope so. I don't want him to lose that.
No, it was a big deal when he got it. So you don't just leave it on a planet.
Awesome. That was fun. That was great. We'll take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us. Okay, we're back. It's time for some news. Actually, not much news this week. Most of the news was just reviews of the episode and Easter eggs and stuff. But I noticed they did go back and digitally remove the guy in jeans that showed up behind Greef Karga in episode 4.
Right? Yeah. You were right about that, too, because you thought they would.
I think you said they were
going to do it. Yeah.
And in this week's episode, one site reported that about 10 minutes and 49 seconds in, off in the distance, right over Boba Fett's shoulder, you can see what looks like a helicopter. It's really far away. I went back. You can see it. I wasn't sure if that was supposed to be the Imperial transport coming in, because it lands just like a minute later. but it looks like the shape of a helicopter. So I feel like we might be seeing something else digitally removed coming up here.
Or is it just a bird? Like some people, sometimes birds fly through shots. Again, if they're doing this in a real location.
Right. I just thought of that. Yeah. If it's the digital, then it had to be.
It had to be intentional.
Intentional. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was only on one site, so maybe it was bogus.
Yeah.
Mm. That's it. So let's move on to listener feedback.
Bianx Vargas says, I can't believe they expected us to go to bed after that episode. Such a disturbance in the force.
I like that.
I watch it in the morning.
Oh, yeah. Me too, actually. Brad Holt writes, I'm running out of superlative words to describe this show. They manage to top themselves every week. Boba Fett kicking Stormtrooper butt with a Tusken gaffy stick. I always wondered how they used those.
Yeah, you know. Steve Barr says, I was surprised to see it in combat. In an earlier episode, they showed a Tusken Raider using one to pick the teeth of a Bantha.
It's a multi-purpose stick, that thing. You can do all kinds of stuff.
Alex Baelish, first thoughts are just wow. This show and this season have made up for all the years when there was no Star Wars, other than the books growing up. Boba Fett in action, nothing better. Jon Favreau is doing a great job of weaving the storyline by having characters come in and out. It makes it that much more fun. Now that Grogu is kidnapped, I think they will all riot.
If Grogu's kidnapped, we riot. Yep.
Yeah.
Barbie Allen loved seeing Fennec again. She and Boba Fett make a formidable team. The Stormtrooper body count was way high this week, to the point where I was just laughing when they kept sending more in. Loved seeing baby Grogu all zen in his magical force field, wondering who he was actually channeling. The interaction between him and Moff Gideon was also intriguing, particularly when Moff teased him with the lightsaber or the darksaber. And yay, Kara's coming back. Really good episode. Can't wait to see how the strange new alliances are setting up to play out, and if the Jedi also come to the rescue.
Right. Yeah,
me too.
Ian Fult says, the title alone scared me. Perfect episode.
Isn't that true? Like, I felt anxiety as soon as it said
the tragedy
on screen.
Because they're usually not so loaded of a title. They're usually naming a person or something.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know?
Not a...
The Iris, for example.
Katrina Wang, at the end, it almost looked like Moff Gideon was considering having an apprentice.
Ooh.
There you go.
That's interesting.
Ryan Reckerly, I feel like we finally got to see the Boba Fett we had always envisioned.
Cheers.
Yeah, because he was a bit bumbling in Return of the Jedi. Michael Darwin says, 42 years, 16 days, 19 hours after making his debut in the Star Wars Holiday Special, Boba Fett finally fulfills his potential. And then he has a little play here. Disney, hey, fan, want the new Mandalorian action figure? Fan, sure. Disney, that's $20. Fan hands over money. Disney, oh, look, he's got Beskar armor now. Fan hands over money. Disney, now with jetpack. Fan hands over money. Disney, spear. Fan, stop that. Disney, sorry. Hey, how about a $300 Razor Crest playset? Fan, sigh. Here. Disney, oh, no.
Yeah, I think the fan would be going, oh, no.
Yeah, right. Disney would be.
Right.
Yeah.
How about here's Slave One?
The nice thing about the
Disney
Lego
machine.
The nice thing about Lego is you can build the Razor Crest and then act out that scene. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I do not plan on doing when I get my Lego Razor Crest soon.
Damian Vitale. The tragedy is right. Mando lost the Razor Crest and Grogu. On a positive note, he gains an assassin and a Boba Fett. Grogu's Jedi skills are improving by leaps and bounds. Wonder if he reached any Jedi when he was in his meditation. Funny seeing those stormtroopers being tossed around in the cell, but I hope Moff Gideon gets his turn. Grogu stunned and in binders. We must riot!
Oh, more rioting. All right, Mark Nagy. God damn it, Mando. WTF.
Sherry Morford said, I am not okay. Grogu. This was such a good episode. Boba Fett is truly a badass. I'm glad Mando has some powerful allies to help him rescue Grogu.
Indeed.
Brian White, if you destroy the Razor Crest, you must bring back Boba Fett in the same episode. This is the way.
Right, it's a bit of a trade-off, right? Mm-hmm. Lost a ship, gained a bounty hunter. Charles Richard Patterson says, have we seen any weapons in the Star Wars universe that Stormtrooper armor does protect against? Not many.
I know. Maybe a little light poking.
Yeah.
CJ Dan says, I still need an episode on how Fett escaped Sarlacc and the Jawas got his armor. Yeah.
Alicia Stout. No, not the Razor Crest. So many amazing things about this episode. Where do I even start? Seeing Boba Fett's ship and Boba Fett himself, major feels, even though he seemed a bit thick through the midsection in his armor, lol. I got Major Morgan vibes when he was swinging that metal staff. Fennec is so badass. Loved the fight scene with her and the stormtroopers. Grogu getting more strength and power. Holy dark troopers. They are terrifying and they fly. Anyone else want to jump in their TV and strangle Moff Gideon? No one takes my Grogu and lives, just saying. Fantastic episode. I seem to sound like a broken record, but this seems like the best episode ever.
Oh, yeah. Shannon Nielsen. I think my mind is officially blown.
Austin Medesian. Can it be next Friday yet?
Totally.
Anytime.
In emails, we have Steve from the UK. Hey, guys. Love the podcast. Was just wondering if you have noticed how Din Djarin is sounding more and more like Clint Eastwood as time goes on. And isn't this show great? I look forward to a new episode every week, and I haven't felt like that for a long, long time. Sorry, just had to put it out there. Take care.
Don't be awesome. Sorry. And,
yeah, don't be sorry. Exactly. Chris Waters writes in, Baby Yoda will be the source of Snoke. He will be captured by Moff Gideon. I think he will be genetically modified and become Snoke. Ahsoka Tano is correct that Grogu would or will go to the dark side and be mentored by the Sith. She and the Mandalorian will die trying to stop Grogu from being captured. This will scar him, making him the evil Snoke.
Dang, that's dark. Yeah. He wrote this before this week's episode, so he was right about the first part.
Yeah.
Being captured by Moff Gideon.
There you go.
They're going to have to add a lot of mass. Snoke was a lot bigger than little Yoda.
Yeah.
I think there's a 101% chance that you're wrong, but if I'm wrong, I will buy you a beer. It's just too dark.
Yeah.
I don't think they would ever do that on this show. They're trying to make kids happy, man. But we'll see. Maybe I'm wrong.
That would be a tragedy.
Here is Steve Brown.
Another amazing episode of The Mandalorian. Hey guys, it's Steve, and I was, as soon as I saw that title, The Tragedy, I was like, oh crap, what's going to happen? And, you know, that ending, man, how are they going to, how are they going to get Grogu back? It's crazy, but I can't wait to see it. I think, let's see, if I had to pick three moments out of this episode, definitely that Boba Fett fighting with the Bantha sticks and just demolishing those stormtroopers was incredible. Seeing Mando come in and save the day with what's her name? Finica. I don't know.
The other taco.
Girl bounty hunter that they caught in season one with the one guy who did that thing. Anyway, yeah, but him coming in and saying, and then of course that reveal, that huge reveal that I'm sure is you guys are going to talk about, and you'll probably explain. Maybe there's some more backstory to it. The explanation of the fact that Jango Fett was a foundling and actually fought in the Mandalorian Wars, and so that made Boba Fett worthy of taking that armor and wearing it. So the only thing I wished is when they were having that little conversation there and it was all three of them and Boba Fett said, well, we're indebted to you. I really wish they all in unison would have said, this is the way.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's complicated what makes a Mandalorian and what doesn't. But I think the point of that was to make Jango Fett just a little more like legit, basically.
Right.
And Boba too. All right, that's our show. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you want to write in or record a message and send it in, you can email us at groovy@podcastica.com.
Check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/housepodcastica.
We're also on Twitter and Instagram @housepodcastica.
Please check out the other shows on the Podcastica Network at podcastica.com. And you can check out Chris's podcast at talkingdeadpodcast.com. Now that Walking Dead, well, the spinoffs are over for a while, what are you guys going to be doing?
Good question, actually. We're taking this week off, but we'll come back next week with something. We usually cover some other movie or show or something like that. Haven't decided yet, but please check us out.
We're doing our top five movie directors next time.
Oh, that's fun. That's good. Give us a spoiler. Who's your number five?
Oh, gosh. I haven't made my list yet. I know Fincher's probably on there. And
Robert Rodriguez.
I won't name them all because I don't, but I know definitely for sure that Edgar Wright is going to be on there. I love him.
Ah, cool.
Yeah. Nice.
All right. That is our show.
Thanks for listening.
Hey, anyone want to buy a Razor Crest Lego set?